This is Chris Slade, former University of Virginia defensive end, graduate of 1993, back on the staff at UVA. Excited to be back coaching my old stomping grounds. You're listening to the Jerry Ratcliffe Show.
Welcome to another edition of the Jerry Ratcliffe Show podcast with my co-host, Chris Graham. Thank you for tuning in. We love that you participate in our podcast a couple times a week. And we'd like to thank our sponsors right up front, Greenberry's Coffee, also UVA Orthopedics, and the Aberdeen Barn. Thank those guys anytime you see them for sponsoring our podcast, where we bring you everything you need to know about UVA athletics and more. Without further ado, and later on in the podcast, when our guest is done, she's only going to be on for a little while, Chris and I will look back at the kind of review the Duke game and look ahead to tomorrow's Florida State contest, the last home game of the regular season, at least for Virginia. But without further ado, let's bring on our guest. Big hit the last time she was on the show with her incredible storytelling abilities and her charming personality, and somebody that the Wahoo Nation has been in love with for more than 40 years. Just a wonderful person, one of my favorite people, Ann Holland. Annie, how are you?
I'm doing great. I really am. We're doing really well back in Charlottesville, and we're at Westminster Canterbury. So what's not to like about that? They're taking care of us, and we're enjoying being back.
I've heard that's a wonderful place.
It is. It is really nice.
We wanted to touch with you after the game the other night with Duke. What an incredible basketball game that was. Like, it seems like every Virginia Duke basketball game in the last 13 or 14 meetings has come down to the wire almost, it seems like. And it was a shame Virginia lost that game. It was a game that could have gone either way, just like the one in Durham. And but beside the game itself, there were some sidebars to the evening. And I thought one of the most lovely moments of the evening was when Coach Mike Krzyzewski, Hall of Famer, here for the last time, retiring after the season, made a special point out of coming over before the game and seeing you and Terry. I just thought that was a special touch that we don't see enough in the ACC anymore. Talk about that moment.
It was a very special moment, and we were fortunate enough to be, Phil Wendell had invited us to sit in his seats beside him, so we were mid-court, so Coach K could at least see where we were anyway, but he did come over and grab Terry and hugged him, and it was almost like both of them didn't let go for a while. I just kept standing there thinking, that is amazing to me, and it was very touching to Terry. He loved it, and Mike really has, we all go way back, as a matter of fact. When we first got into the ACC, not many of the coaches, and there were only 8 schools at the time, and not many of the coaches were talking to each other. We happened to know Lefty and Joyce really well because Lefty and Joyce were our mentors at Davidson. But, you know, Norm Sloan wasn't talking to anybody and nobody was talking to him, and just went on, and Dean and all the things that went on. And then Terry got to be president of the little basketball guys, the head guys. And his first meeting, he said, come before and we're going to have dinner and bring your wife. And then we will dismiss and then go to our meeting afterwards. And he said to me, you make sure all those wives know they're supposed to come. And so I went around and just introduced myself and said, okay, we're having dinner, whatever. And then those 8 of us got to be really, really close. And that has continued. And even through the years, like with Joanne Stack, then Lynn Odom, and, you know, even when the schools would change, the rest of us would always send flowers, or, you know, if somebody left, we'd always say, oh no, we'll just always be tight. And we have. Usually we meet at the Final Four when it's gotten down to only 4 of us now, but if any of us are at the Final Four, we all meet and have a breakfast together. And so Mickey, Mike's wife, and I have remained really good friends. And she has 3 girls, and they're good friends with my girls, and our girls know them, and the Valvanos are the same, and of course the Odoms, and Linnea and Carolyn Ellis, we all know about her kids, and Carolyn Crimmins, and of course Joyce has just died, so that got to us, and then Barbara Robinson has died, but Mike to come over was really special because he didn't need to do that, but you know, because we knew. And then at halftime, I got Ralph and we went over and took Mickey a gift from, you know, Terry and us. And she was really impressed. And Ralph was amazing. He has really become an amazing man. He speaks so well and he's so thoughtful and he's giving back to this community. He just wants to give back because the community is so good to him. And did you not love it? I don't know if you saw it, but when he walked in before and everybody stood and clapped and yelled and you looked around and said, what happened? And it was Ralph walking in. So
I did see that. And yeah, that was quite impressive.
And when Mike came over with Terry, the crowd was standing and clapping and there were cameras everywhere, and it was pretty powerful. And he knows Terry, you know, has the Alzheimer's, and we don't know how many more games we'll get to go to, but the people in Charlottesville have been amazing to him. They have just, you know, wrapped their arms around him and spoken with him and treated him like he always was. And it's been really, really heartwarming to see. And we have felt the love. It's been very nice.
Yeah. He has meant so much to not only the community, but UVA and the ACC. I think everybody has just great admiration for him. I know I do. He embraced me when I came here as a sports writer the first time. And we had a few words a couple of times over some things I wrote. But he understood it. And we always made up and remained great friends ever since. I have the utmost respect for him.
Well, he feels the same about you. He does. You've done a great job for the Virginia Athletics. You always did a great job.
Well, thank you. You know, Mike Krzyzewski said the other night, a lot of people don't know this too, but Mickey's uncle was Monk Bingler, who a lot of people loved too, who was a local high school referee. I don't know if he ever called any college sports, but I know he did the high schools all around Central Virginia. And he was a longtime usher and was sort of the guard dog at the press box at the football stadium. And he would always walk the and take care of the basketball game officials before and after the games at U-Haul and JPJ. And of course, he passed a couple of years ago. A lot of people didn't know that he was Mickey's uncle and such a great man as well. But it was funny, Mike Krzyzewski said when he landed, the basketball gods have a way of sending you messages. And he said that he, I don't know if the ACC tournament documentary was on somewhere and he saw it and he turned to his assistant coaches and he said, you guys don't know how easy you got it. He said, you see that? I had to coach against Samson and Jordan and all those guys. But yeah, it's a different world. And I that just kind of, like you said, was a heartwarming, touching moment that it just kind of reminded me of how the ACC was for so many years. And I think we've lost that a little bit because it's spread out all over the Eastern Seaboard and all the way to Louisville and South Bend, Indiana now, but it's gotten so big and corporate. It's not the family that it used to be, but it was nice to see that. It was the way, like Krzyzewski said, he said, that's the ACC I know. And I wish it could stay that way, but I guess it's not going to.
I know it really is sad in a way because You know, I knew every player on every team and everybody else did too. They knew the coaches, they knew the assistant coaches, they knew, I mean, it was amazing. And I can remember when we were watching, when Terry first came and Jaminski was playing and we would lose, and we would get Ralph to come over when he was a high school player. And I can remember sitting beside him and saying, would you please come to Virginia so we don't lose to Duke again? And it's funny because the entire 4 years he was here, he never lost to Duke. He never lost a game to Duke. And he said, well, Ms. Holland, you know, we didn't lose to him. I said, yeah, you know, you're right. We didn't. But we had great battles and it was wonderful, but you knew everybody and the families knew everybody and you knew they were working as hard as you were. That's why I used to yell at the referees. I wouldn't yell at the players or the coaches because I knew they were trying so hard, but I felt like referees were fair game.
And still are.
I yelled at them. And about 20 of them came over after Terry quit coaching and said, thank God he's out of coaching so I don't have to hear you anymore. And I went, you could hear me? And they went, oh, yeah.
Oh, that's funny.
But it was really, it was neat. I thought that was great for sport. It's too bad that greed has gotten in the way for lots of things, because I think that's what all of it is about the money and the, and it's funny, when I looked at Mickey, I said, Mickey, are you ready for this to be over? Because it's been a long time. She said, I am ready. And I said, well, you're going to love it. You're going to love it.
Yeah. Yeah. It's a lot of pressure on coaches' wives. People don't realize what you all go through, because you have to hear, if things aren't going well, you have to hear your husband getting criticized, and sometimes it can be rather brutal.
Yeah, it can be, especially if you have little kids.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. But I'm glad you touched on Ralph a little bit, because I'm really proud of who he's become. He's just an incredible human being. Not to say that he wasn't before, but he's just developed into such a great man in the community, and give, like you said, giving back and getting involved with a lot of things here, and such a good guy. I mean,
he really
he's fun to be around. He's fun to be around, actually.
He is. And he's so appreciative. And when you hear him give talks, one of the first things he says is that I am as proud of graduating from the university in 4 years as I am of anything I've ever accomplished. He is so proud of that. And, you know, that was a big deal. It really was.
He promised his mama he would do that, right?
Yeah. Well, I don't know. I don't know exactly what the whole thing was, but he surely did do a good job. He really did.
Yeah, he did. What was it like having him living in your basement for a year?
Well, it was well, you know why he went. He was living on the lawn, really.
He was getting harassed by fans, right?
Well, he got sick. Well, the students always took care of him. So during the day when he was around students, they wouldn't let people bother him. But one night, right after he first moved on the lawn, he got sick. And there were newspaper people and photographers and stuff. You know, they have the communal bathroom. So if he was going to throw up, he had to go outside and go. Well, the cameras were there. So he got in his car and came over and knocked on our door and said, Coach Holland, can I stay with you? I'm sick. And so we said yes, because we had a basement that was, you know, had a bedroom and a bath and a kitchen and everything in it. And so he would stay there, you know, at nights and stuff, but he would go and be a student during the day. And it was not any different than, well, Michael Owen stayed with us when he broke his jaw. There seems like there was always somebody that either was hurt or whatever. And I remember Terry calling the NCAA and getting permission for him to live with us, because it was, you know, and they said sure because of the situation. But it was neat, because he would babysit for the girls, and I'd just, you know, when he was there, I'd say, okay, I'm leaving, they're asleep and whatever. And he was great with them, and both of them still call him brother. I mean, that's what they call him. And so that he's been really good about checking on our kids and through the years. And he's just a really neat person. He really is.
Yeah, no question. No question. Yeah, it was a special time for sure. Well, listen, thank you so much for taking a little time out of your day and giving us some of the inside scoop on what that was like. That was, I thought that was one of the great moments of the season, really.
Well, it was. It was really special for Terry. And Mike has always been, he's been really good about that with us. So they've always kind of kept up with each other. So, and it's been fun watching Mike, and it's been really fun watching Jim Larrañaga. I love watching his teams play. Yes. So that's been something that Terry and I have had fun doing. So it was special for both of us. And it was nice being with you. Nice seeing you too.
Well, thank you. We'll have you on some more from time to time if you'll be gracious enough to have us.
I'll love it. Maybe I'll come up with some really weird stories. I've got a few.
We love weird stories.
Can you see this? Of course, you know, your audience can't, but it's a picture of the wives.
And oh, yeah.
I've got the bunny ears over Mickey's head.
Yeah, you do. I wish we could share that with our audience. That's a great picture. I recognize some of those ladies, not all of them. But yeah, that's awesome. You'll have to send us a copy of that.
Okay.
We'll put it on our website.
All right. Have a great day.
All right. Thank you, Ann. Take care. Say hi to Terry.
I will. Thank you. Okay. Bye-bye.
Looking for a great dining experience in Charlottesville? Look no further than the Aberdeen Barn. The barn has been family-owned and operated since 1965, with Terry and Angela providing great atmosphere and mouth-watering food at Virginia's big-time steakhouse. Enjoy the fine dining or relax in the Sportsman's Bar, a fantastic place to wind down and socialize, surrounded by flat-screen televisions tuned to the latest sporting events. You never know who you might bump into at the Aberdeen Barn, where all the greatest Cavaliers have dined over the decades and keep coming back for the delicious menu and good times. Check it out online at aberdeenbarn.com or call 434-296-4630.
Hey, this is Thomas Q. Jones, former UVA All-American running back, and you're listening to The Jerry Ratcliffe Show. Wahoo wah.
We are back. I'm Chris Graham, and boy, that was great. Jerry and Holland joining us again, giving us some more stories, some more details that we didn't know about. I didn't know about anyway. Gosh, and I didn't know Monk Bingler was Mickey Krzyzewski's uncle. So you could probably see my face, Jerry, when you said that. Dropping. I knew Monk for many years, just like a lot of UVA media folks did. Had no idea about that time.
Yeah, Monk was one of the special people around UVA for those who knew him. And
yeah,
just about everybody knew Monk. He's such a popular guy and such a friendly guy who had told some of the worst jokes. I don't mean bad jokes. Not very funny jokes.
Not very funny jokes. And he told them very, very detailed. Yeah. And he'd grab you by the arm.
Exactly. So you had to listen to it whether you wanted to or not.
But
he was a great guy, a prisoner of war in World War II to the Germans and escaped. And he had some interesting stories. But I did a lot of pieces on him back before and after he passed. And I remember when Roanoke Times, longtime sports writer Bill Brill passed away, and he was a Duke graduate and friends with Krzyzewski. I went down for Brill's memorial service, and Krzyzewski was one of the speakers at his service, and did an eloquent job. And afterward, he was so gracious. We would stand around talking to him and Mickey, and I told Mickey I knew her uncle, and her eyes rolled back and said, "What do you know about Monk?" But yeah, that was great. It was great, and I got a little emotional when she started talking about Terry. He's just always been such a special friend to me because I remember, I'd only been in town for a few weeks. I got here during basketball season, and I wrote something he didn't like, and he sent people out all over the community looking for me because he wanted to chew me out. I found out if I was playing tennis back down in McIntyre Courts, and somebody put a message on my windshield wiper said, "Terry Holland's looking for you." And I said, "Oh no." And so I called him and he chewed me out for a while, and I deserved it. Whatever I wrote, I probably should have gotten chewed. But anyway, we made up quickly and we've been friends ever since, but he's always been so good to me over the years. And I just have great admiration for him and Love him to death. But that was some great stories by Ann, which is always a treat to talk to. And if you enjoyed her stories today, she has a long podcast on our site archived. Telling stories from Terry's coaching days and all that.
And when he was recruited by Lefty Driesell, that's the story. I mean, that was the first story of all of the stories that day. Boy, and she, you know, she promised to come back on again. So we got to do that. There's more in that. There's more in the vault there, I'm sure.
Yeah, that's one of my favorite stories of all time. But let's talk a little bit about the game the other night. So close, could have gone either way, just like the game down at Durham. And Krzyzewski pointed that out. That, and you know, how many times have we heard Tony Bennett say it's usually whoever can make plays at the end of a game, it's going to win. And this time it was Duke. And they play, they, as well as Duke played, they still barely squeaked out a win.
Yeah, you know, what I thought was the key was Duke's just got more players. The under four timeout, I think it was three something to go. Coach K brings in A.J. Griffin and subs him in for his centers. I guess Mark Williams would have been the guy going out of the game at that time.
Small ball.
He went five guards, basically. And Tony, we don't have five guards, you know, in years past. In one of my columns, I wrote, you know, in the years when DeAndre Hunter and Braxton Key were on the team, either or both, those guys could guard anybody from 5'9" point guards to 7'2" centers. And you could be flexible with either one or both those guys on the floor. But this year's team just doesn't have a guy like that. And so A.J. Griffin hits a three. He hits another three. Tony calls timeout, goes to Cody Statman and takes Shedrick out. And then Griffin takes Statman to the hole. It's a guy that was 1-for-8 from the floor to that point. And he makes three straight baskets, eight points in a row, ends up with 10 points in the last 3:39. And like you said, Jerry, Virginia kept coming back. I mean, they kept countering. Every time he'd make a basket, Virginia would make a basket. It's just when you're down, you know, you can't trade basket for basket. And that was an example of, you know, and Coach K was humble about it after the game, because I was wanting to give him credit and say, hey, you know, I mean, you out-coached Coach Bennett there. You went small and you forced Coach Bennett to adjust. And even when he adjusted, you got the advantage. And he said, sometimes you try things and they just work, was what Coach K said after the game. And that's what happened. He tried something and it worked. And, you know, if Griffin misses those shots, he's 1-for-8 going into that stretch. If he misses those shots, Virginia maybe wins that game, and Coach K looks like the GOAT, not the greatest of all time, but the other kind of GOAT. But it worked, and, you know, he got a win. So, you know, what I love about these matchups, Jerry, you know, it's not every time Virginia plays another team or you see two other college basketball teams play each other where it comes down – there's always these in-game coaching machinations that go on where,
yes, you
know, like in this game, Coach K came out and he was trying to take away the inside. Virginia scored 52 points in the paint in the first game. So let's take that away. Kia Clark makes six threes in the first half. Sometimes you try things in Virginia's case, they had Kia shooting threes and that worked. And then second half, Coach K decides to take away the you know, Kia's good looks. That opens the floor back up for the bigs. And the bigs, you know, Jaden Gardner had 14 points in the second half. Stuff like that. Every UVA Duke game with Coach K and Coach Bennett have those kind of things going on that people like us have a lot to break down before and after a game.
Yeah, you're right. And it's not like, you know, I'm sure that kind of stuff is going on in all games, but here you've got two master coaches just going after each other and trying to find an answer to the other guy's good fortune. And they do that. They counter each other throughout the games, and it was great. You know, and Krzyzewski said, you know, you're talking about Griffin being 1-for-8, and Krzyzewski said afterward, he said Griffin passed up a three in the corner, and during the next time he came over to the bench, he said, what are you doing? He said, just because you aren't hitting, you're going to make the next shot, you know. That shot is your first – the next shot is your first shot, you know. But he said he's also 18 years old, so You know, it's part of the learning process, but you know, it's, I'm sure he's seeing some of his players grow up in front of his eyes, like we have seen some of Tony's players grow up before our eyes this year. And it's so much fun to see them develop. And that, that kind of reminds me of what Krzyzewski said about it. Virginia doesn't make the NCAA tournament, it would be a sin, because, you know, they're 3-1 against the top two teams in the league, or they've been the top two teams in the league all season, pretty much. And that reminded me of back when Dick Schultz and Terry Holland and Craig Littlepage were all members of the selection committee and eventually chairman of those committees. And particularly something Craig Littlepage said to me the last time he was involved, and he would watch, he would stay up and watch games late at night to make sure he was giving everybody justice. But he said, you know, the numbers are nice, the RPI stuff and all the other charts and graphics and analytics they give us is nice. But he said, to me, it comes down to the eye test. Does a team pass the eye test? And that's what Krzyzewski said the other night after the game, is that, you know, numbers are numbers, but he said, to me, Virginia passes the eye test. And I hope that they have people on the committee, and I haven't looked to see who the breakdown of the committee is. I hope it's people with a lot of basketball backgrounds, because there's been sometimes in the past where some of the guys might not have been coaches or maybe only ADs and didn't know the intricacies of the game like a coach would. But I hope that there's enough coaches, former coaches on that committee to where they consider the eye test instead of just the analytics.
You know, I when I was doing some research, we both write a lot about the tournament and at-large bids and the bubble the last few weeks particularly. We haven't been writing about the bubble for you and I for years, because Virginia hasn't been on the bubble for a long time. So we've had to refresh ourselves with what it's like to be on the bubble from a writing standpoint. And I found an article by Jerry Palm, who was breaking down what he's been told the committee uses now. And, you know, a lot of us, and I say us included, you and I included, but then, you know, certainly the Twitterverse and the message board folks and everything else, we look at net, we'll look at KenPom and say, wow, Virginia won a big game and only went up one in that metric there. And what's going on? We're probably overemphasizing the metrics based on how Jerry Palm said that things are broken down. He broke it down into categories: most important, some value, not nothing, but not very important. And most important, games by quadrant, which would be, you know, Virginia's got 3 quadrant 1 wins. The metrics love Virginia Tech, who has no quadrant one wins. And they really love them. They're like 40 spots ahead of Virginia, but games by quadrant, records by quadrant, away and neutral as well. Your non-conference strength of schedule. Wake Forest, you know, a lot of us are looking at eye tests and saying they're a lock. Their non-conference strength of schedule is 334 this morning when I looked. They might have some work to do still. Overall strength of schedule, most ACC teams will have a good overall strength of schedule, but that's certainly a factor. Overall road and neutral records. Some value, your average net win and loss, your overall record. Not nothing, but not very important. This is the computer rankings. That's all we look at, it seems like. When you look at Twitter, when you look at the message boards, everything else, it seems like all we're doing is complaining about the metrics. The metrics are not nothing, but not very important. So, Jerry, I think what that says is confirming pretty much what the guys have told you over the years. Those computers are helpful, but they're far from being the determinative thing. And it sounds like the determinative things are those things that we've always had: the eye test and the record against good teams.
Yeah, I like that, because I know that's what Craig used to say, is, you know, the RPI is nice for reference, but that's not what we make our determination on. So I'm glad to see that that hasn't changed, or at least I hope it hasn't. So if that's the case, I think Virginia definitely has a chance of getting in, particularly if they win against Florida State and a week from tomorrow at Louisville, when they close out the regular season and head to Brooklyn.
UVA Orthopedics and Sports Medicine boasts one of the finest teams of doctors in the country, and they're right here in Charlottesville to not only provide care for the University of Virginia athletic teams, but also the Charlottesville and Central Virginia communities. UVA Orthopedics has been a proud sponsor of the Jerry Ratcliff Show for the past 2 years, with numerous team members featured in weekly segments where doctors share great insight into various sports injuries, what causes them, how to treat them, and recovery time. Their team of experts are there for you and offer the best care to solve your health problems and get you back on your feet. Let their team of specialists get you back in the game.
You know, I think a win, I mean, I definitely think 2 wins in the last 2 regular season games are pretty important, especially because, you know, Florida State's struggling right now with all the injuries. My goodness, when I was looking at their breakdown today and doing some analysis on them, so many guys are hurt. You know, he was missing all 5 of his starters. What was Coach Leonard Hamilton last week against Duke? He got one guy back before they lost on the road at Boston College on Monday night. They're still probably down the 4 starters. He likes to play, as he explained, he likes to play guys in 4.5 to 5 minute shifts, and he can't do that anymore. He's playing guys 37, 38 minutes a game now. He's not used to doing that with his guys. He's got young guys doing it because he doesn't have his starters doing it. So it's not like he has some bench guys hurt. He's got his starters hurt. So as a result, they were at one point 13-5. They've lost 8 of their last 9. They were in first place in the ACC at 6-2 after beating Miami. And, you know, now they're under 500 in the ACC. So you got to win that game tomorrow. And then at Louisville, I mean, Louisville, you know, the coach got fired after they lost to Virginia the first time. You got to go there and win a game. It's tough to win in that environment. Yum Center is a tough place to play. But you win those 2. And I think if you win 1 in Brooklyn, if you win 2 in Brooklyn, I think you can go ahead and punch a ticket. But if you have 3 more wins, I think adding it up, I think this Virginia team with that the strong wins. We don't even forget Providence back in November.
Yes.
18-point win very over a really win. Good Providence team. And we're all rooting for Providence to go unbeaten the rest of the way. But yeah, you know, I think that this resume is a lot stronger than the computer model certainly suggests. And so, you know, go out there and take care of business. And I'm sure that's – yeah, that's what Tony is telling his team. You can't worry about metrics. You can't worry about any of that stuff. Just go out there and win the next game.
Yeah, I would agree. And Florida State, like you said, they're struggling. They've lost 8 of their last 9 games. They're 7-10 in the league. They've been – I think Seth Greenberg said it on our podcast a couple of weeks ago. He said they're sinking like the Titanic. And that was – even though they were injured a little bit then, they've been injured even more since.
Yeah, yeah.
So, I think if they can knock off the Seminoles here in Charlottesville tomorrow and go out to Louisville and take care of business, I can't see them going to Brooklyn and losing in the first round. So – unless they just get a really bad matchup or have a really horrible night. But I don't know that there is a really bad matchup right now because Virginia has improved so much. And that's another thing I think the committee looks at is the last 10 games and how well your team has developed over the course of a season and how a coach has brought along a team that was injured early or young early. And how they've developed. And that's what coaches are supposed to do is bring those teams along, particularly the young ones with not much experience. That's exactly what Tony's done. Now, you can't ask any more of him than what he's done. So, I agree with you. I think they get 3 more wins and they're in, 4 more and they're definitely in. I don't know how in the world you could possibly keep them out under those circumstances. So, they still have a good chance, I think, and they just got to take care of business. And like Tony said, after the Duke game, just learn from what we did wrong and tighten up.
Yeah, you know, and you can't have a Duke hangover. I mean, you can have a hangover after a win, certainly, you know, celebrating the win and feeling like you've beaten the world. And after a loss, too, though, and Tony talked about that after the game, too. Like, this is just one game. You got 2 more to play. You know, and he told his team before the game, it's what he told them, you know, go out there and play hard and let's go out and win. But if this is just one game and, you know, beating Duke wouldn't have done much more to silence the Joe Lunardis of the world than losing a close game like they did. And so, you know, Florida State presents its own challenges. When I look at their roster, this is a typical Leonard Hamilton team, except for all the injuries. He's not going to play 12 guys, but they're big. The smallest guy you'll ever see on the floor for them is 6'4", Raekwon Evans, the point guard who's back from injury. He's the one guy who's back from injury. But they start 2 7-footers, and they'll play together for 10 or 15 minutes. They'll each play a total of 20, 25 minutes. Their off guard is 6'7". Their small forwards are 6'8" and 6'9". So it's a big team. And, you know, Virginia can have some issues with that. Kea Clark at 5'9"-ish. He'll be out heighted by 7 inches by Raekwon Evans if that's his matchup. Jaden Gardner at 6'6", will go up against a 7-footer for a good part of the game. So these are challenges that Virginia has met. You know, the Duke is also much bigger than Virginia, you know, similarly. And Gardner, we've got to talk about Gardner, by the way. That first game against Banchero was obviously a nice coming out kind of game for Gardner. You know, we've talked about how he had a little rough stretch a few weeks ago. But, you know, I kind of expected, Jerry, going into this one, that you would get Banchero's best effort. And Gardner had his number again. Banchero was 2 of 13 from the field, a couple air balls, one that wasn't an air ball only because it hit the backboard and didn't hit rim. He had turnovers. He did not look like the number one pick in the draft that we were told before the season he was going to be. And so either he's not the number one pick in the draft, or Jaden Gardner is a lot better than advertised, and we expected a lot, but I don't know that people thought NBA out of Jaden Gardner. But if he can control Banchero like he did in those two games, I think we got to look at him as an NBA guy down the road.
Yeah, it's a good point. And, you know, the two games against Virginia is the only two times this season that Banchero has not scored in double figures. And right. In the two meetings, he averaged 8.5 points, shooting 22.7%, 5 for 22 with 7 turnovers. So, yeah, Gardner handcuffed him from – the very beginning and didn't let go.
And Gardner averaged 16.5 points a game in those two matchups. Yeah. And, you know, I noticed at the end, towards the end of the first half, Wednesday night, Gardner looked exhausted. I mean, cause you know, you're fighting. I mean, and Coach K said after the game, the only thing I disagree with anything he said after the game, he said, Virginia kept doubling Banchero. I saw one double of Banchero. When I wrote a column, I couldn't go back and look at every single play right after the game. But I remembered one, so I hedged and said a couple of times they doubled him. But I remember the one. After that, Banchero sort of just floated around the perimeter like he did in the first game. But boy, Gardner was working his butt off. He missed a free throw at the end of the first half, I remember, and he just looked. He was kind of pulling his, you know, when you see a guy pulling their shorts from the bottom and kind of leaning over when they're getting ready to shoot a free throw, you know, they're exhausted. And it was the first half. He had 2 points on 1 of 4 shooting, and I'm thinking, man, you know, he's already worn out. You know, maybe Banchero takes off in the second half now because Gardner's the guy checking him. Not only did Banchero not go off, but Gardner went off. He had 14 points in the second half. A guy that, I mean, I'm thinking that he needs oxygen and plasma at halftime. He comes out and plays a you know, balls to the wall second half. So, I mean, just I can't say enough about how well he impressed me. A guy we've seen all season long, but boy, you play that well in front of all those NBA scouts there. I counted. There were 10 scouts sitting behind us, Jerry, on press row. You know, they may not have gone to see him play. They were there to see all those Duke kids play, but they're going to remember that undersized power forward held his own, more than held his own, twice against that guy who's going to be, you know, maybe the number one pick in the draft.
Yeah. And even Krzyzewski after the game said that, you know, one of the tough things about playing Virginia is not only are they very physical, but it's how they run their offense. It just wears you out. You got to chase and chase and chase. And then, you know, 50-some possessions, that's a lot of chasing.
Jeremy Roach talked about that too, that was what Kihei did so well in the first half when he made those 6 threes. Their game plan was they basically were just running through screens, and so that would leave Kihei open, and, you know, they were kind of sticking, you know, the guards were kind of sticking back in the lane, closer to the guy in the lane than they were to Kihei. In the second half, I noticed that they didn't start it right away, but they a couple minutes into the second half, after that Coach K timeout, anytime Kihei ran through a screen, the big would switch and then go to Kihei. And what that did, so Kihei had six threes in the first half. He had five assists in the second half because, hey, I'll adjust too. If you guys are going to adjust, Kihei adjusts. And Kihei says, okay, I got Gardner on a guard. I've got Shedrick on a guard. It was that one alley-oop that he threw. That was right after one of those down screens. So, and that's, again, that's the chess matchup that, you know, that you see between these teams that you don't always see in a matchup, because too many coaches these days just roll the ball out there and let their guys play. Tony and Mike Krzyzewski don't do that. They play system ball. And, but no, it was just neat to see that. And love to see Kihei adjusting again too. I mean, what a game for Kihei, 25.77 assists in that game. He had a nice talk with Coach K after the game and talked about that afterwards as well.
Yeah. Coach K, we asked him what Coach K said to him in the handshake line, and he said he just told me that I'm one of the best guards in the ACC, and got to put my battery plug my computer in real quick before.
Oh, sure, yeah. One of the best guards in the ACC, and that, you know, Kihei is understated, so he's not going to give you too many details. We've hung around with Kihei. I remember even in the Final Four locker rooms, the NCAA tournament 2019. Boy, you end up saying more words in your question to Kihei than you get in terms of words in the answer for him. But yeah, you could tell that meant a lot to him that Coach K came over to him and sought him out after the game.
Yeah, and how cool was it that he did that in front of his family? He said, I think there was around 20 family members there, and I think they'll be there for the Florida State game as well, senior day. Even though Kihei has another year of eligibility if he wants it, I don't know that he'll come back, but
well,
at least he'll go through the ceremony, I guess, tomorrow.
I can put it on the podcast. I won't necessarily put this in print because it's known. I mean, Scott and I have been talking about it. Scott German, our colleague, after one of the recent games, being Scott German, he just chatted people up. He's like Monk Bingler. He knows everybody. He was talking with Kihei's parents, and it was back, I think it was after the Miami home game a few weeks ago, and was chatting with them about, you know, making a long trip from Hawaii, I guess. And they said that he asked, you know, so, you know, Kihei has an extra year of eligibility. Is he going to use it? And the parents at least told Scott that Coach Bennett had already asked Kihei to come back, and Kihei had said that he would. Now, I did see a story in I think it was a Times-Dispatch that I just saw today. It was sometime this week written, I guess, by Mike Barber. I didn't pay attention, but I'm sure it was Mike Barber. And Kihei on the record said he hasn't made a decision yet, but Kihei's parents told Scott that they've already gone through that process. So he will go through senior day tomorrow because he is a senior. But I mean, our expectation based on talking to his parents is he's coming back next year.
I'll tell you what, that would be good news for Virginia with all the influx of talent they're bringing in. And, you know, I imagine Gardner and Franklin will return, I would think.
Franklin's only a junior, so he has, I mean, theoretically 2 years of eligibility if he wants to use a COVID year, but at least one more year. And then Gardner is a senior, would have the COVID at redshirt year as well. So, yeah, you could bring all those guys back. Oh, my goodness.
That could be a pretty good basketball team next year.
You bring those four guys in. I think we're hearing that maybe one of those, maybe Leon Bond of the four, may redshirt. But, you know, you bring basically what? Everybody but Cody Statman, I think, from your eight-man rotation effectively, seven-man rotation right now. So you bring six of your seven-man rotation back. You bring three more guys in. All of a sudden you'd have depth. You would have depth at guard with McNeely. You'd have some size with Trout to augment what we've got there with Gardner and the two bigs, Cafaro and Shedrick. Yeah, this team is already playing really good basketball here the last few weeks. Throw some more talent in there. Throw some four-star talent in there and see how good we are next year.
Yeah, you won't be on the bubble, that's for sure.
That's right. So tomorrow's game is a 4 o'clock tip. Jerry and I and Scott will be courtside. Jerry tweets through the game. I kind of do too. I also live blog during the game, so kind of covering both bases there. Look to jerryratcliffe.com and to augustafreepress.com for game previews. We'll have all as much as we can there. Also, I guess we should be looking tonight. I know there's the baseball team starting a 3-game series of Cornell. We'll both have reports on that. Wrestling, I'm sure, has some stuff going on. There's other UVA sports
going on. Big lacrosse game tomorrow, I think.
Yeah, lacrosse tomorrow. Yeah, you know, you can make a day of it tomorrow if you wanted to. If you're coming to JPJ anyway, the game is at 4 o'clock. There's the lacrosse game beforehand, also a baseball game beforehand. I'm sure this isn't the official way to say things, but you can buy a ticket to one and sneak into the other one. So you can get a little taste of both. I've done that once or twice before. So, but anyway, yeah, there's a lot of stuff going on grounds and with UVA sports this weekend, and, JerryRatcliffe.com will have a lot of that. GusFreePress.com will have our taste of it as well. So, Jerry, busy weekend for us.
Yeah, well, you know, we're getting down to the nitty gritty now, so we can, I think we can endure for a few more weeks and then things lighten up a little bit.
It lightens up. I don't want it to lighten up personally. We're both heading to, along with Scott German, he'll be driving. I think I'll let Jerry sit shotgun. That way I can sit in the back. Maybe it's safer sitting in the back with Scott driving. But we're heading to Brooklyn.
Are you saying he drives like Chris Slade?
Tony
Elliott won't let Chris Slade drive.
Scott listens to these podcasts, so I will say that Scott's a great driver. And the reason I'll sit in the back seat is, Jerry, I'm just deferring to you and your position. But yes. So if Scott's not listening, yeah, he can put the fear of God in you a little bit. But we're going to Brooklyn for the ACC tournament. We'll be heading up and covering UVA's run, hopefully a long run through the ACC tournament. So, yeah, busy times.
I'm looking forward to keeping my string alive. I've been to every ACC tournament, covered every ACC tournament from 1974 on. So I want to try to hold that streak as long as I can.
And that wasn't easy last year because last year,
yes,
last year was the COVID year. So, but yeah, that's a great streak to keep going. So we'll be there for that. Gosh, there's so much going on. It's a great time to be alive if you're a UVA sports fan. For Jerry Ratcliffe, I'm Chris Graham signing off. Everyone have a great sports weekend.